أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
الصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين ولعنة الله على أعدائهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وأما بعد قد قال إمام حسين عليه الصلاة والسلام إني أريد أن آمر بالمعروف وأنهى عن المنكر وأريد أن أسير بسيرة جدي وأبي صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم. I express my condolences to all of you during this holy season in which we commemorate the sacrifices of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, his companions and his family members in the path of preserving this religion for us. Over 1400 years, this religion is still here. And this is due in sole part. This religion is brought to you solely by not only those struggles of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But this message has been guaranteed to us and protected for us and delivered to us by Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam and those usara, those captives in his family. When we look at the events of Karbala, at the events of Ashura, we see that the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam is multifaceted. It has various different sides and aspects to it. This is very beneficial for us because in this we can find some way that each and every one of us can relate to this story. In the variety of participants, in the various lessons that are being taught, in the message of Imam Hussein, in the phases of his movement and of his revolution, there is so much instruction for us. So these various aspects, these facets of this movement, is what makes us able to year after year after year derive new meaning and new inspiration from these events. Because it's a divine movement. One of the characteristics of divine movements is that they are very profound. They are not superficial or shallow, but they have depth. If you look at, for instance, for an example, the Quran, when you read it, when you come to understand it, when you get a little acquaintance with its Arabic, you realize that this Quran has a depth to it, a profundity to it, that is unparalleled in the world of literature. As far as meaning, it's there, it's got it. As far as vocabulary, the way in which that meaning, that message is expressed, it's got it. As far as rhyme and beauty of the method of delivery, it's got it. Haqqaniyat, the truthfulness of that message, it's got it. So we look at something like Quran as an example. We see that it's very deep, very profound, having many different aspects to it. And this is one of the characteristics of divine movements. When we look at the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, we also see that these various aspects, these different facets, have also led to us misunderstanding the movement. So at the same time that these various aspects are beneficial to us, due to our ignorance of Imam Hussein's revolution and his movement, these same facets, these same aspects can lead us to misunderstanding the message. And if you send a salawat for me, then we will begin our discussion this evening. I know that you've heard me say this before, that Imam Hussein's movement had two sides to it. One side is a dark side, a tragic side, the side over which we mourn and we grieve. The other side of this story is victorious, triumphant, full of light and inspiration. And unfortunately, all too often, we don't pay attention to this. And people will say, well, what do you mean we don't pay attention to this? Realize that most of us, when we come to the Muharram programs, take a look around now, it's the usual suspects tonight. Most people, when they come for Shahr Ramadan, they stay till when? The 10th. But the 10th isn't even the beginning of the revolution. The 10th is the vehicle of the revolution. The way in which this message will be delivered so that it'll be imprinted on the hearts and in the minds for all time to come. But it's not the end of the story, the 10th. And we usually have programs for 12 to 14 days during these times of year. And most people leave on the 10th. Why? Because to most of us, the message ends. The revolution ends on Yom HaAshura. Oh. That's the end of it. It's over. That's the finish. And for most of us, our goal in coming to these marasim and majalis is because we want to cry. And there's nothing wrong with that. Crying, mourning, grieving over the tragedy of Imam Hussein has been highly recommended by the a'imma, by our imams. But this mourning should be done from ma'rifat, from understanding of that movement. Many people have the idea that they come here, they force some water out of their eye, they beat their chest for a little while, and their sins for the year are forgiven. And we've heard people say that before. You ask some young people in other parts of the world, why do you go to these majalis? They say, because when we cry over Imam Hussein, our sins are forgiven. So again, our ideology has gotten closer to Masihiyat, to Christianity. So, this same multifaceted nature of Imam Hussein's movement, these same different aspects of it, have also led to us misunderstanding it. And a large part of this misunderstanding of ours is due to our culture and our expectations when we go to majalis. When we go to majlis, we expect to cry. And in fact, when the majalis are organized and put together, those speakers who can make the people cry are in the highest demand. They're in the highest demand. And so we see that this culture of ours in paying attention to this page one, this first side of Imam Hussein's movement, has actually in many cases blinded us from seeing the side two, which is concerned with the victory of Imam Hussein. Which should be especially useful to us today, in today's world, because it's that side of the revolution that's led by women. Realize another aspect of Imam Hussein's movement is that it's mudhakkar and mu'annath. It's male and female. It's not one of those things that's dominated by men, or one of those things that's dominated by women. It has male and female, equally important, equally active in this movement. So when we look at this multifaceted nature of Imam Hussein's movement, and we realize these two sides of Imam Hussein's movement, and we realize these two basic phases to Imam Hussein's movement, how is it that we've only focused on one side? And as we said, the reason is our culture. If you give me a salawat, we'll give some examples of that. You know, it's come to the point where when we organize these majalis, if the speaker doesn't make the people cry, or if the people don't cry, then the one who organized that majlis, he's at blame. The The one who organized it, he's at fault. Niyatesh Paknabud. His intention wasn't clean. So when he organized the majlis and nobody cried, it's his fault. Somebody has to take the blame here. They give a story. They have a story that they recite. Some of the ulama have recited in their books. They mention that there was a man in one area of Tehran. He was trying to organize the Majalis al-Husseini, and he was organizing different speakers, different azadar, for different days of the week of that scheduled appointment. And there was this one Rozehan, this one reciter, who was known to change the facts a little bit. Because one thing is this, that because of our culture that we need to cry, what's happened is a great deal of tahrifat, alterations in the history of Karbala have occurred. And we recite them. We recite them from the minbar, in the midst of people, and people have accepted them as truth, as fact. So he invites this one man. And he knows that this man is known for embellishing. So he invites the guy, and he tells the guy up front, look, no embellishing tonight. Those Zahra Mariha that you have, those tricks that you pull out of your sleeve and use, none of that tonight. Finally, the turn of this man comes, he gets on the minbar and he starts reciting his musibat. And his musibat, he's trying to keep it as close to the facts as possible, and nobody's crying. Hajaga is in the corner. He's getting nervous, nobody's crying. If people don't start crying soon, the ladies in the community, they're going to talk about him. So he looks over and he leans over at that reciter on the minbar and he gives him a little wink and he says, you know, just a little bit, just a touch of those embellishments, it won't hurt anything. And this is what's happened to our culture, that we expect to cry, we go there crying, expecting to cry, not realizing that the true mourning for Imam Hussein comes from understanding the movement, the aims, the goals, the ideals of Imam Hussein's movement. There's many ways in which we've changed this story, and I'll mention a few of them for you this evening, inshallah. Let's look at Hazrat Abbas. Hazrat Abbas is one of those participants in the movement of Imam Hussein that, look, you go anywhere in the world, Pakistan, India, Iran, Lebanon, any place where there's Shias, there's going to be a Ya Abbas sign. The status of Abbas is such. And it's not just that we've made him as that. On one hand, yes, we identify with Abbas because he is not an imam. So we look at Abbas and we see what we could be if we tried. So we identify with Abbas. We see ourselves in Abbas ibn Ali. But at the same time, Imam Hussein has given him status. Imam Hussein has said, look, if you want permission to enter my haram, go and make ziyarah to Abbas first. The iznid dukhul, the permission to enter the haram of Imam Hussein, is ziyarah to Abbas ibn Ali. So Abbas has this status. We identify with him. But we've also changed the story. Because there's a natural thing in human beings called hero worship. You know, look at in American folklore, Paul Bunyan, John Henry, Babe, the big blue ox. It's likely that these stories were based on real people. But over time, John Henry changed from a hardworking human being who was able to probably do extraordinary feats in his lifetime to somebody who laid the entire railroad track system of the United States. And we see that with Hazrat Abbas. They say Hazrat Abbas was so tall, such a big man, that when he sat on a horse, his knees touched the ears of the horse. Or when he extended his feet would touch the ground. Can you imagine someone shaped like this? How long must their legs be? that they sit on a horse and their legs touch the ground? Another story they tell, that Hazrat Abbas was at the Battle of Siffin. Now, it's unclear whether he was there or not. He would have only been about 15, 16 years old. They say when Hazrat Abbas entered the battlefield, the first guy that came near him, he threw him in the air. The second guy that came to him, he threw him in the air. The third guy that came to him, he threw him in the air. And he continued doing this for 80 people. When he had thrown the 80th person in the air, the first one was just coming down. And as the first one came down, he cut him in half. And as the second one came down, he cut him in half. And as the third one, and so on and so forth. Can you imagine such a thing? Can you imagine such a thing of Hazrat Abbas? This person who was central to the victory of Imam Hussein's movement. Another story that they tell about Hazrat Abbas is that once, when Imam Ali was on the minbar giving a khutbah, Imam Hussein was in the audience and he was thirsty. And I've heard this one from the minbar. And I've recited this one from the minbar. Without doing the research. Many of us have heard these and we don't realize that they are falsehoods. So Imam Hussein is in the audience. Imam Ali is giving his khutbah. And Imam Hussein says, "Agha man tishnam. Daddy, I'm thirsty." And Hazrat Abbas, not being able to stand the thirst of his brother, stands up, gets up from his place, goes to his mother, asks for some water for Imam Hussein, and returns with that water. As he enters the mosque, he slips, trips on something, and that water spills. And Imam Ali sees that scene and begins crying. When the people ask him, "Imam, why are you crying?" They say, "This Abbas of mine will die bringing water for this Hussein." Understand something. The only time Imam Ali would have been giving a khutbah is when he was in Kufa as the Khalifa from the minbar. At this time, Imam Hussein was at least 33, 34, 35 years old. He is in the audience. His dad's on the minbar guiding the people. And he's going to say, "Daddy, I'm thirsty." And Abbas, who's maybe 15, 16, is going to get up, go get the water and fall down like a klutz when he comes back. We've invented these stories. We've embellished these stories. Because our culture is such that we want to cry. One student details in a book that I was reading that he was passing through Isfahan. And he wanted to go for ziyarat in Mashhad. But he laid over in Isfahan and spent some time there. While he was there, it was during the time of Muharram. So he went to one of these majalis. It was after the 10th, but before Arba'in. And he noticed that while he's sitting there, waiting for the Salat to begin, there's a bunch of young men in the courtyard picking up little pebbles. And when the time for the speech comes, Hajar gets on the minbar, he begins to give his speech, and when he gets to the musibat, they turn off the lights. And from the back of the masjid, those young men begin throwing those stones. And the people begin wailing and crying, hollering. Because they're getting hit with these stones. This traveler, he's amazed at the sight. After everything is over, he asks Hajar, "What was that all about?" Hajar said, "Look, I've tried everything to make these people cry. It finally came down to, I had to go outside and get rocks." Now I asked some of the brothers here tonight to do the same thing. So when the lights go off tonight, you brothers, you know what to do, right? At any rate, our culture has led us towards this. To the point where we recite musibat of things that never happened. Things that lower the status of Imam Hussein, that lower the status of the participants. One famous one is the Rose of Hazrat Layla at Karbala. That on Yawm Ashura, Imam Hussein comes to his wife Layla, the mother of Ali Akbar, and says, "Go in this empty tent, take off your scarf," and in some ahadith, not ahadith, but in some versions of the story, it's even mentioned, take off everything and beseech Allah that He should save this son of ours, Ali Akbar, that nothing should happen to him. Listen now. Hazrat Layla goes in that tent in the story and vows to Allah that if Hussein should be saved, that she will plant sweet basil from Karbala to Medina. Can you imagine the work in planting all of that sweet basil? Much less that there was no Layla at Karbala. Not one. No Layla is mentioned to be at Karbala. Certainly not the mother of Ali Akbar. Third, this wasn't the mentality of Imam Hussein on Yom Ashura. Go and pray to Allah to save our son. Maybe He'll save our son. Imam Hussein wasn't thinking about saving sons on Yom Ashura. He was thinking about saving Islam. So, in our exuberance to cry over these events, we've changed it, cheapened the message of Imam Hussein, and done a disservice to that great and historic event by saying things like, on Yom Ashura, Hazrat Qasim was engaged to be married to one of Imam Hussein's daughters. On Yom Ashura? And I heard this one from the minbar. So when we look at the facts in front of us, it's that Imam Hussein's movement has undergone some tahrifat, some changes to it. Many times we don't even know them unless we do the research because of our desire to mourn over Imam Hussein. When the story of Imam Hussein, the message of Imam Hussein, the sacrifices of Imam Hussein are sad enough by themselves, we see at Karbala unequaled humanity alongside unequaled inhumanity. This was the mission of Imam Hussein. To make physical everything that was wrong with the Muslim society of his day, so that everybody could see it. Realize, one other way that we've misunderstood the message of Imam Hussein, we always make it Hussein and Yazid. Nowhere in anything that Imam Hussein says, does he even mention me and Yazid. Even when people come and ask him, how come you don't pay allegiance to Yazid? He always answers in the third person, putting it off. Because Imam Hussein's movement isn't about Yazid. Yazid is just the straw that broke the camel's back. There are many other things wrong in the society that demand Imam Hussein to stand. Only one of them is Yazid. Look at Imam Hussein's mission statement that I mentioned to you in the khutbah. Imam Hussein says, "Uridu an amara bil ma'ruf." I want to enjoin the right. Wa uridu an anha anil munkar. That I want to forbid the evil. Wa uridu an asira bi sirati jaddi wa abi. And I want to live my life according to the pattern, to the sunnah of my grandfather and my father. Now a lot of times we only look at this as Imam Hussein is saying this is what he wants to do. What Imam Hussein is also saying is this is what you're not doing. Amr bil ma'ruf wa nahy anil munkar has ceased to exist in the society of Imam Hussein's day. Living according to the sunnah of Prophet and of Imam Ali has ceased to exist in the time of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein isn't even considering Yazid. Who's Yazid? What matters is what's going on in the society. And if you look at Imam Hussein, his movement, his message, his words, from his mouth, his actions on Yom Ashura, you see that his message wasn't about Yazid or Banu Umayyah. It was about Zulm. It was about freeing the Muslim Ummah from oppression. And we are the ones who have come to misunderstand it and have misrepresented it. When you look at the movement of Imam Hussein, you see that Imam Hussein's movement on Yom Ashura, Imam Hussein provides an example for us, an instruction for us. And one of them is very specific to the Shias. Realize that the Shias of Imam Hussein's day did not only abandon Imam Hussein, they had abandoned Imam Hassan and Imam Ali before him. Part of the message of Imam Hussein is that these people, these sheeple, should learn to respect the shepherd. Should learn to uphold that wilayat that has slipped from their fingers in the course of 60 years. Imam Hussein establishes that pattern, that example of what wilayat is. Wilayat is leading by example. If you will not revolt against Banu Umayyah, if you will not stand up and establish the right and forbid the evil, then I and my family will. If the whole world decides to go astray, Imam Hussein is saying, we, the Ahlul Bayt, are here to show you the way. That if it means our death, if it means that Abbas has to get struck from the back, his arms have to be cut off, that when he's fallen on the ground, that his head should be smashed with an iron pipe. If this is the example that Shias need to wake them up, then Imam Hussein will provide it. The Shias had abandoned their previous imams, just as they had abandoned Imam Hussein. Think back to Siffin. Think back to Nahrawan. Think back to the battles where Imam Hassan is trying to organize his troops, where he's attacked in his own camp, in his own tent, using his own weapon. By a member of his own army. So, this example that Imam Hussein is providing for us, if it takes that Ali Asgar should be slaughtered, that Ali Akbar should be martyred, if this is the example that the Shias need, Imam Hussein will provide it. But Imam Hussein also provides a means to deliver that message. Right now, in this time of year, it's similar to this, that Ahlul Bayt were suffering in captivity. That Ahlul Bayt were suffering under the prisons of Banu Umayyah. They left Karbala on the 11th. Realized that Zainab had to spend the night in Karbala. With everybody gone. With Imam Hussein's body left out on the battlefield. These Usara didn't leave Karbala until the 11th. Until the afternoon of the 11th. So they spend almost 24 hours there in the battlefield, in the presence of those holy bodies. They can look off in the distance and see the body of Abbas. They can look in this direction and see Imam Hussein. His body trampled, lehish kardan. They flattened it under the hooves of the horses. Can you see that sight? Can you see Ali Akbar and the rest of those shuhada spending that night in those tents, but those tents were caught on fire? When they were put on the camels on the 11th to be sent to Kufa, they were deliberately put on camels with no saddles. They were given these saddles not of leather, but of wood. At least, for the ladies, even though they were chained, they gave them some cloth on that wooden saddle. But Imam Zainul Abidin, he didn't even get a saddle. He was tied to the camel. Because he was so weak that if he was left on the camel without tying him to the camel, he would fall off. So rather than lose him from falling off the camel, they tied him to the camel. Tying him to the camel caused his legs to be rubbed raw by the hide of this camel by the time they get to Kufa. They're driven to Kufa non-stop overnight. Arriving in Kufa, they are paraded as prisoners of war. But this Zainab, realize, Zainab hasn't slept till since the 9th of Muharram. She arrives on the 12th. So we're looking at what? 3, maybe 4 days of no sleep for Zainab. Yet Zainab is still able to answer. Answer the ridicules of the governor of Kufa. And to answer him with strength, saying that, look, I see that you've filled up your chest with pride. You think that you've killed Hussein, but you've made Hussein more alive. You think you've killed Hussein, you've made Hussein more alive. When you look at this Zainab after days of no sleep, look at her revolutionary spirit. This is Zainab. This is Zainab who was on the way to Karbala in the service of Imam Hussein. After Ashura, now she's in charge of this caravan. It said that from the seeing the martyrdom of her family members and the tragedy of her family members, her hair went white almost overnight. That this Hazrat Zainab, when she's coming to Karbala, she's begging Imam Hussein, Imam Hussein, don't leave us. Who will look after us? After you're gone, what will they do with us? But after Karbala, you see Zainab take control of that caravan. Zainab now becomes that revolutionary leader in charge of that movement. She's seen that martyrdom of all of the companions of Imam Hussein. She's seen the martyrdom of all of the family members of Imam Hussein. She's had to leave the body of her brother, trampled, bloodied, filled with arrows at Karbala. But realize that Zainab was so instrumental in spreading this message that by the time the caravan leaves Kufa, every village it arrives in revolts. Many of the soldiers accompanying that caravan are killed. Many others have to run away. Zainab now is spreading this revolution. Zainab now is rocking the very foundation of the Banu Umayyah system. Such that the army members themselves are running away and hiding from this caravan. They've been posted to escort this caravan. Now they're trying to get away from this caravan because the people around this caravan in the villages are attacking this caravan, trying to free those captives. It actually forces this caravan to take an indirect route to Sham. Arriving in Sham, Hazrat Zainab witnesses Yazid ibn Muawiyah seated on a throne of gold, with golden and silver thrones all around him for foreign dignitaries. And when the head of Hussein is presented to Yazid, now he begins to boast. He begins to take his cane and hit at the mouth of Imam Hussein, and to smack at the lips of Imam Hussein, and to prod at the teeth of Imam Hussein, and to ridicule Imam Hussein. Oh, how I wish my ancestors were here. Oh, how I wish Abu Lahab was here. How I wish Abu Sufyan was here. How I wish all of my ancestors were here to see how I've done to Hussein and gotten our revenge on Rasul, on Prophet, and gotten our revenge on Ali. Wala hawla wala quwwata illa billah al-aliyyil azim. Ma tawassal.